Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Good to have you with us here on the Mark Steiner Show, on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Now we begin a conversation, a local news roundup about city elections and education, the craziness around the vote count in Baltimore, what that really means, and our history of having these kind of crises. I think from the 19th century on, it's not a new thing. But in the past, people have resigned. We'll talk about that and why these people don't think it's that big a deal. We'll look at education. Sonia Santelices is the new CEO of Baltimore City Schools, but people are, even those who do support her being the new CEO, are not happy about the lack of transparency in choosing the new CEO and what that means, her coming in under that cloud. And also this battle between Governor Larry Hogan and Peter Franchot, the comptroller, and our city and county schools withholding money and the politics of that with our guest. In the studio once again is Luke Broadwater, who covers in the Baltimore Sun, covers a city hall and local politics, education, and more. Good to see you again, Luke, as always.
Good morning.
Catalina Byrd, WEA host, media consultant, political strategist in the house. Good to have you here, Catalina.
Good morning.
With her sweet baby across the place.
She's working.
And Dr. Ronnie Ellington's with us, associate professor of mathematics education at Morgan State University, where she coordinates the graduate programs in mathematics and science education, and often is here commentating on math, on education
hey.
And other issues as well. Ronnie, good to see you.
Hey, how are you, Mark?
I'm very well. 410-319-8888 is the number here to call in and become part of the conversation. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Log on to our Facebook pages. But you can write us an email at talk@steinershow.org, but do call 410-319-8888 on any and all of those issues. We want to hear your thoughts. So, Luke, let me start with you. So let's start in Annapolis for a moment.
Sure.
What is happening? What is this all about?
With the air conditioning?
Yes.
Yeah. So I think there's always two things at play in politics, right? So one is the issue itself, and that is this fight over how quickly the school systems should adopt central air conditioning in each of the schools. And then two, there's politics. And that, so this fight originated out of Baltimore County, not necessarily Baltimore City, but Baltimore City's been brought into the fray, perhaps unfairly. Baltimore County is the bellwether county in Maryland. It has the most Republicans in the state. It has the third most Democrats in the state. It is a swing county. It can vote for Republicans. It can vote for Democrats. Larry Hogan won it very big 2 years ago. Kevin Kamenetz is widely believed to be perhaps challenging Larry Hogan in 2 years. Larry Hogan knows that full well, and I think he believes that he has a winning issue here, which is to demand that all these schools have air conditioning more quickly than what the county executive has planned. As this brouhaha, this fight was going on, it was pointed out that also Baltimore City schools don't have air conditioning in many of the buildings, and so they got brought into it. Now Governor Hogan and Comptroller Franchot have taken it's an extreme measure, but some have called it extreme, and they've frozen some funds for school construction until all those buildings have portable air conditioning units in them. The administrators for the school system say we'd have to tear out all the wiring in these schools to put in window units. They can't handle them, and that would be a very costly fix. And then a few years later, now tear out all the wiring again and put in central air conditioning, and so this is not fiscally responsible. So you have quite a fight going on in Annapolis.
And Ronnie, your thoughts on this, and I guess we'll know the real answer to this when Franchot comes back out and after he declares himself a Republican, he'll tell us what he's doing. But I'm sorry, I just had to throw that in.
It's funny. This is so funny to me because Luke said first there's the issue at hand and then there's politics. I would argue there's politics and then there's the issue at hand. So, you know, I was teaching in Baltimore City Schools in 1992 and there was no air conditioning. I mean, this is just bananas to me. I'm trying to get under the issue, and I think you do a good job of discussing. There's some election piece that if I'm fighting for air conditioning, I'm going to look like I'm pro-education when there's so many other issues in education that we can be fighting for. I find this interesting, and the strategy of withholding funding as a way to pull the card, I just, anyway, I'm going to leave the air conditioning thing to you guys because I find it absolutely bananas that we're even having this discussion.
I think the analysis, Luke.
Yeah, you did a good job.
About the politics of it, I think is kind of more real.
I don't know, I mean, it makes sense. Like what Luke says makes sense. And we've all heard those same things and know that that's what Kevin Kamen thinks he's going to do. But I also feel like I've never seen a grant get funded where they didn't tell you what the funds were going to be used for. And so, like, the politics aside, this was good governance. You can't call it a partisan issue. Peter Franchot is a Democrat who has been a Democrat that just doesn't go in line when the money doesn't make sense. And the governor is a Republican, so clearly they were both bipartisan. But yes, we need a plan. Like, I'm just not going to give you some money and you not tell me how you're going. That's how it always ends up missing.
But there was a plan. There has been a plan for a long time.
Exactly.
They didn't have an implementation plan. Baltimore County and Baltimore City for the transition between the whatever the other units are that they're going to use, the portable ones versus window units. And that's all they're asking for. And they said if they give the plan to them in an expedient time, they'll release the funds before the school year. Like, that's fair.
I think that's fair. Wait a minute. Unless I'm wrong about this. I mean,
I'm with you, Mark. The plan was in place. I just don't think it was quick enough. And when they did a feasibility, I think they did some kind of study and to find out how feasible it would be to honor that plan, there was a lot of loopholes. So it's like, yeah, anyway.
And you wouldn't have funded it either.
Well, what I wouldn't have done is done it how it was done. And so when you can just pull, and, you know, one of my issues with Larry, bless his heart, this, I'm going to withhold and I'm going to do this when you don't do what I want you to do, particularly in counties like Baltimore City, Baltimore County. It's just interesting to me that he doesn't do that necessarily in other ways with other counties that look different. So you telling me that every other county is adhering to all of these logistics that he's now holding money from? I would argue this is not about air conditioning.
They probably don't have as many children in them per capita, but I just feel like this particular governor, because he's a Republican, and especially in Baltimore, which is a blue district in our little purple state, it doesn't matter what he does or what he says. He's going to always be wrong by certain people, and
I don't think he's wrong. I just think he's going about it the wrong way. And I think that there was a study done. I mean, there was a lot of discussion. That's how we know that it can't be done for what Luke mentioned. Like, there was some looking at how to do that, and it just didn't work.
And then
it should be noted that the gentleman who was overseeing the state's construction money for schools and the upgrading of all the facilities resigned in protest over this decision.
Right.
He said that this was a political move and that it did not represent the solid research. And then Governor Hogan went out and said he didn't resign quick enough. Good riddance to this guy if he doesn't want to listen to the Board of Public Works, which is his bosses. So there you have a pretty extreme action by somebody who saw this as a political move and not necessarily as a sound decision.
So let's see what the listeners think at 410-319-8888. Let's go to Ed in Baltimore. You're on the air. Welcome, Ed.
Hello.
Good morning, Ed.
Beyond the matter of politics, I'm hoping that folks are noticing a change in weather patterns since about the last 10 years. Like right now, we get a fall-like temperature in the May, and the month of September and October, a lot of the school buildings are hot. I mean, the weather's hot. And, for instance, I used to attend football games and could sit in the bleachers in the month of September and October. Well, I can't do that now because the bleachers are piping hot, whether they're metal or plastic. So there's something going on with global warming and things of that nature. And now, when I was in school, September and October were moderate-like months. You could sit in the bleachers and stands and not get third-degree burns on your legs and things of that nature. But all jokes aside, something is changing with our weather patterns. We even have a monsoon season in the month of April. So I don't think, and like I said, in the month of September and October, the children are baking in these buildings without air conditioning. So I think there's a nasty situation going on that weather-wise and politics-wise that people are not considering. And I'm hoping that other folks are paying attention. I don't know if it's El Nino or whatever you want to call it. But in certain buildings without air conditioning, people are suffering, not just school buildings. But
yeah,
right.
I mean, the conditions in some.
I just hope people pay attention to these matters.
Thanks, and I think there is an issue clearly that the issue of climate change is very real.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of concern among Baltimore County parents about the hot conditions in some of the schools. There's a woman named Lily Rowe who actually recruited Franchot into this movement, and he came down to, I believe it was Arbutus, and had some big rally, and all the parents were all fired up. So the you know, they believe this is a real issue of concern to Baltimore County parents, and I assume also Baltimore City parents.
It's a health hazard. Then there's also the heat issue. Once the weather goes in the opposite direction.
That's arguably a bigger issue, right? Yeah.
That's also a different issue that we haven't figured out. It's sad at the expense of the children because I know you said you taught in the schools in 92. I was in the schools in 92 and we didn't have air conditioning or heat that was functional then.
And, you know, my daughter goes to a Baltimore City school and she's like, Mom, it'd be hot. And I get the concern. Again, we're not saying that we should not address the issue. See, so people, you know, it gets collapsed. Okay, we need air conditioning. Okay, we need air conditioning. But we also need to be fiscally responsible. We don't want to make a decision. Just like when you have your own home, you may need to do some renovations. But you have to look at the whole picture. What does it really cost to do that? Many of these buildings need to be condemned in Baltimore City, to be honest with you. You know, that's what drove the whole fiscal improvement plan and getting new school buildings. So we know that there's a concern about the building structures here. But is this the way to handle it? To just arbitrarily say, you better put a unit in or you don't get the money. And then if the whole thing, if the grid collapse in the building and then they have no electricity, then what? You see what I'm saying? Like then we're going to be mad because the students don't have any lights because the circuits can't handle the air conditioner. So,
right.
So those are things we have to consider. We got to look at it holistically and not just, okay, you better do this or else. And then, okay, we do it. Then, you know, they're in the dark. With nothing. Then we're going to be mad at that. You see? Y'all didn't even know what you was doing. You see what I'm saying? That's the part that's getting to me.
It does seem this is more politics than it is anything else. I mean, there's a lot of fury, Sturm and angst around this. And this, I think, has a lot to do with the coming, the Hogan appearing, how he wants to appear as this strong fiscal manager in the government and cabinets being the pushing the hardest to say, you know, that yes. This is local control. We know what we're doing, and I know how to run this government better than you do. I think that's a whole lot about what's going on.
I sort of understand their political, if not motives, then what could be seen as advantageous positions. But Franchot's more of the wild card to me. Is he setting up a primary run against Kamenetz? Is he shoring up his base as controller?
Operated.
He just... I don't know.
We've Catalina? Talked about this for 8 years. People have always speculated what else does Franchot want to be. And I think he's just a numbers wonk.
He did want to be governor once, but I think he's given up on that idea. And he just wants to be a controller for life.
I think people speculated that he wanted to be governor.
No, I think it's more than speculation.
But he never really went for it. I would have supported him. I tried to beg him. I even tried to bribe him.
two years ago, I saw him in Baltimore County on election day, and he said he was going around all throughout Baltimore County, and that he saw that really as the key to Maryland. And on 4th of July last year, he marched in 4 parades, and all of them were in Baltimore County. So I think he really knows where that swing county is.
Let me switch gears before we open the phones. A lot of people calling in, so we'll get to their thoughts. Well, let's get to their thoughts now. Let's go to let me see where we want to go. Leo, you're on the air, Bolton Hill.
Morning, Mark Steiner.
Leo Burrows, how are you?
And good morning, everybody.
Hey.
Good morning. I must tell you, the Open Meetings Act is a Maryland statute, I do believe. I want you guys to speculate why that is not being enforced vigorously with respect to the Under Armour and Port Covington fiasco, in the sense that they've steamrolled that $535 million TIF ahead of the voters or ahead of public hearings. And additionally, Santa Lisa's, the new superintendent, you know, they disregarded the Open Meetings Act there as well. Who's going to enforce that? Is that the Attorney General of the state of Maryland? Now, who's going to protect the public interest when it comes to a violation of the public trust and a flagrant disregard of the public's right to know? And yes, the the city schools don't have air conditioning, and they don't intend for the black schools in Baltimore City to have air conditioning.
We see, really I don't think that necessarily is about black schools. It's about Baltimore County schools, too, which not the majority of school students are there.
Yeah, but it's discriminatory in pattern.
It is, but I'm just saying that I think that it has more to do with Hogan's dislike of this city, his lack of caring for this city, for lots of reasons, including race, I think. But I think that when you look at county schools, this is countywide, whether the schools are Latino,
Hogan,
white, or black.
So. Hogan and the mayor control the school board of Baltimore City, and they're not doing justice by us. They're not doing what they should be doing.
So
why aren't they?
So let's go to your first question first, which has to do with, and Luke, just about the law.
Sure.
I mean, the open meetings law has always been kind of a murky area.
Mm-hmm. So the open meetings law, and it's largely up to the police and the press to the public and the press to police this. We have filed complaints against the Baltimore Development Corporation, along with some other media outlets, the Baltimore Business Journal and the Baltimore Brew, over their committee meeting in closed session about the Port Covington TIF. Those are still pending. We have not received a ruling from the Open Meetings Compliance Board. However, before the Board of Finance, those meetings were public, and they were public because of our complaint mm-hmm. that we filed 2 years ago against the Harbor Point TIF. They met in secret at that time. They lost. We won. And now they are meeting in public. So now these bills are going to the city council. There's a public meeting on them, on TIFs, generally on Thursday. Carl Stokes is hosting it at the city council chambers. And I would hope the public comes out and lets their opinions known at that time. The bills have not passed yet. They are just introduced today. So there's still things that could change, or it could be voted down. Who knows? Although, you know, reading the tea leaves.
What about the open meetings law vis-a-vis the city school board?
So, again, the same applies. If there's a quorum, they have to follow the open meetings law. There are 14 ways to get out of the law. One of them, I think that they can – personnel is one of them. They may be able to go into closed session for that. I know there's a lot of people who are upset about this process being – behind closed doors, never being announced.
Mm-hmm.
Other school systems have had public processes where they announce three finalists. They have hearings. They let the public come and talk to them, do interviews with the public. That's even been done in Baltimore City before, but it was not done in this case. Whether it's a violation or not is someone would need to file a complaint before the Open Meetings Compliance Board and see.
I don't know. I always think back to a Leo McGarry quote from The West Wing, things that you just don't want to see made, laws and sausage. I don't know that. I think there's a public outcry because other people who have larger voices in the city tell them something has happened, nefarious because they didn't know about it. But we have public meetings all the time that the public doesn't show up to. So whether open or closed, if we're not fully engaged in the process, what's the difference in the outcome when we're honest with ourselves about it?
The difference is when they have closed meetings, the press can't go in, which is where we get our information.
And so if you – so if
with the exception of Luke, we have some very questionable press.
I think the Brew does great work. I think there's a lot of great people doing good work in this town.
So if they are found in violation, what they have to do is – it doesn't change anything. I just want people to know that.
Right.
And the next meeting, they have to read a letter that says they were found in violation. And then if the person who filed the complaint wants to press it forward, they can take it to court and get up to like a $1,000 fine. And that's nothing to an organization as big as the ones we're talking about.
Do you have a comment on this?
I have so many comments. I've wrote notes. I'm just staying in the moment. So this whole idea, and I think you bring it up, the idea of having public meetings versus what is the public's role in when it is public is an issue. But I'm with you that if there's a rule that says we need to bring certain things public, particularly the selection of the superintendent of schools. As a former member of PCAB, if I was still on PCAB and I found out that we were just willy-nilly getting a superintendent, that would be problematic because there is a voice of the parents. People want to know who's going to lead the schools. So to do that in closet, whether it's against the public meeting rule or not, just does not fare well. Particularly, I used to say, we knew that Thornton was the cleanup man. I called him the cleanup man from day one. I said it on live TV, on live air. He was the cleanup man. He cleaned up whatever he did. Now he has to go. We knew that. We knew he wasn't really engaged. People knew he was on his way out, kind of in the speculation population and then to actually go through the whole selection process and have no real input, that just doesn't sit well. Now, again, there are some legal issues around that, but the fact that that was done, and particularly because Sandalisa was the second in command to Alonzo, who, leave that alone.
Lost the money, too.
Exactly. So you brought in the cleanup. So you had Alonzo. He rolled out. You bring in the cleanup man. You toss him under the bus, and then you go get the second in command from the previous person that he cleaned up from.
We had Dr. Thornton on First Edition, I think, like his first week or something. I was like, oh, he ain't going to be here long.
Exactly. I knew. I'm like,
he looking for the missing money from before he got here.
He was these people,
why are you getting checks and protected by tenure and you don't doing no work and you don't have no performance?
But
ratings?
We knew he was, again, the way he was selected, it was all, the writing was on the wall. Mm-hmm. It was so clear. But then the way you're going to backhand it and then say, okay, well, we're going to just get this person over here, again, who was the second in command to the person who actually left before the cleanup man. Now, as a person who has hood logic, you know, I'm a PhD and, you know, I'm from D.C. streets. This doesn't sound too good. Something is awry here, whether it is or it isn't. But in its visual, there's something off.
And staying in the moment with you, right? In this moment where, everybody's in formation. Ain't it mighty ironic that it's a black woman? Not just only Alonzo's number two, but in a moment, in a climate where we are supposedly all in favor of black women and leading, and Beyonce has led the clarion call for whatever Beyonce calls the clarion call for. I think it's very interesting, too, that it's a black woman they put there, because there'll be people in the community who will say we have to give her a chance and will not make the Alonzo connection and just see her for who she is and hear her talk about her daughters and how her commitment to the classroom is because of the standard that she judges them by, and will give her some cover regardless of her past associations.
Well, go ahead, Luke.
Yeah. Oh, sure. One comment that I've heard from several people. So obviously people are very upset about the secrecy. The other camp that I've heard is we got the best person. So what does it matter?
We don't know who the other people were. So you can tell me the best.
There were no other people. There were no other people.
Now they said that they did a search for $33,000. I mean, somebody was searching somewhere.
So yeah, and that's another issue. Is all city expenditures above $25,000 have to be disclosed before the Board of Estimates, and that includes settlements of school system lawsuits and things like that. And this was never disclosed publicly, and so that is yet another unanswered question from this, because that is. That's in the city charter.
Right. Two things to me. I mean, several things with this. Now, and then we open the phones here. I think that this is we have a right to know the process.
I need to know who got the $33,000.
It was a lawyer.
Lawyer.
I forget his name.
His name is out there. But I can look it up in a second here, but I don't recall his name off the top of my head. But he it seemed clear to me that unlike the two of you, I was not enamored of Dr. Thornton nor his work.
That's what I'm saying. I wasn't either. He was the cleanup man.
From the moment he walked into a school meeting and said that I only answer two things, God and data, and that was, that said, okay, well, here we go. And he had no kind of creative solutions to where our schools were going to go at all.
That wasn't his role. That's what I'm saying. Hired for that.
And I interviewed Sonia Santelisa numerous times, and I actually have to say I've been impressed by her thoughts and ideas, and we'll see where she will take the school system. My problem isn't with her. My problem is with the process.
His name is Roger Thomas, the attorney.
The attorney. Thank you. I think the process really just cannot abide a process like that that is not transparent for people to see what's going on and have to know where public dollars are being spent and what the process is for hiring people or doing TIFs or whatever that is. That has to be opened and above. And that's the issue to me.
And also,
the bottom line.
If she was such a great candidate, why not have it? I guess they said that they wanted to keep it secret because they were doing something with Thornton's contract. There was a reason given. But again,
you have to pay him off.
Yeah.
With a year's salary. So let's get a quick phone call
a break. We do this with the commissioners of the police department.
Let's go to William on line four before we go to break. William, you're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning to you and your guest.
Good morning.
I recently traveled to London via Iceland, and they have hot springs there, and 87% of their building and the country is heated by hot springs.
Right.
So the Chesapeake Bay is a great source of coolness or even the schools that around the school have lots of property. They have a thing called geothermal energy, and just below the frost line, 32, 36 inches is a constant 50 degrees. So in Europe, they run coils into the ground and extract the coolness from the ground, and they cool the building. And as far as retrofitting building, they have, I was in the, Millennium Dome in London.
Uh-huh.
And they have cooling coils that cool the top of the building. So as we know, hot air rises. When the hot air hits the cooling coils, it cools, you get this curtain of air that comes down. So at the schools, you can run the, you can get the first or second year engineering students from all the colleges in Maryland to design systems for, you know, for each school and use the land space to heat and cool the building. You know, you wouldn't have to tear up everything. You just have a cool ceiling and warm floor. Like the houses in Europe, my sister's house, they have radiant heat. The coils run in the floor, and our whole house is warm. Everything warms up. So if the heat shuts off, the house doesn't cool down instantly. It may cool down. It take a day for it to cool down because everything is warmed up.
Well, I mean, we hear you, William. I think that's a really – it's an interesting point. I mean, we can't get too deep into that today, but I think that what you've raised is an issue that I know someone is actually looking at here in Baltimore who I'd like to get on the show soon, looking at alternative energy systems and the way we do things and what the cost of that would be, what would be the reality of geothermal and radiant heat in our public buildings, the reality of solar on the roofs as well. I mean, doing things in a way that we're not thinking, which I think is what we have to. Nobody's going there, unfortunately, in our state or city government in terms of thinking about alternatives. But I think you raise an important point, and I don't think we could tap into geothermal like they do in Iceland. I like Iceland as well, and it's an interesting country, but I don't think we have the natural resource to do that. But that's a good point, William, and I'm going to bring that to my producers, and I think maybe a show on alternative energy and geothermal would be good for us to wrestle with it another day. We'll take a short break and come back, our news break, and Holly and Clarence, you're up for our calls. We'll come back to our city school system and the elections and more. Stay with us. Back with Pledge of My Time by Bob Dylan from Blonde on Blonde, which was released 50 years ago today. I think one of the great rock and roll albums of all time. Bob Dylan's Blonde on Blonde, if you can call it rock, whatever you call that album, it was good. So, still good. And we're still here with Luke Broadwater, who, of course, reporter for the Baltimore Sun, covering City Hall, local politics, education. Catalina Byrd, media consultant, political strategist, host here and guest at WEAA often. Dr. Ronnie Ellington, associate professor of mathematics education at Morgan State University, where she's the coordinator of the graduate programs in mathematics and science education, and often does commentary in this program on education and other matters as well. And you all at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talkatsteinershow.org by email. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Log on to our Facebook pages. Just join us, 410-319-8888. Looking forward to you being a part of this conversation. So where do we leave off? So we left off with geothermal energy and our
Iceland.
In Iceland.
London by way of Iceland.
We can talk about Iceland another day. And I love Iceland. A great country. But anyway.
I received a text message while we were on break that wanted you to know that the Green Party is talking about renewable energy and that there are people in the city looking that way. Someone wanted me to let you know that.
Thank you very much.
I wonder who that person was.
Let me guess.
His name is Andy Ellis.
Ellis, of course.
It was either going to be him or Spilly, but that's cool.
So, well, we're not talking about the mayor's race today, but we will soon. And we'll have the Green candidates on as we look at the city council races. But let's to where we are. So this process of transparency and where this goes, I mean, I think is really important at the moment. I mean, look at with the incoming mayor, which most likely will be Catherine Pugh, mm-hmm. after all this counted. I guess it'll still be her. She as the next mayor. But this question of transparency is really a big one, whether it's the lawsuits being brought by the press, questions of what's happening on the Board of Education. I mean, I think this is more important in some ways than the political battle over air conditioning. Though air conditioning, I think, is important for our students. I think it's really critically important when our kids are in those places. Since we have schools now, they don't have windows that open anymore, as I did as a child. So I...
Me too.
Yeah, right. So where does this go, do you think, politically? This whole question of transparency and what it says. I mean, because Catherine Pugh is going to be faced with it as mayor when it comes to these decisions around TIFs and everything moving up. She's got 8 new council people coming on, 7 of whom we know will most likely, if the Democrats prevail in their general election, will be very new, young, and ready to push hard on some issues. So this is not going to be a minor issue.
Mm-mm. Well, I'll say that when you're in charge, transparency becomes much more difficult.
Yes.
Because everyone loves transparency when you're on the sidelines because you want to see what's going on. But when you're in charge and you've got to make everything transparent, then it's a much bigger ask. So it takes a really almost a selfless personality and a personality who doesn't mind being embarrassed, because that's normally the hang up with transparency is about embarrassment, looking stupid, saying things that are foolish. So the commitment to transparency is always realized once they actually have the power. So we'll see whether or not there is transparency.
That's a really good point.
Have conversations around transparency in election years, and then in the off years, nobody's calling for transparency, so nobody promises transparency, and it disappears. I don't feel like there's any of us that stay vigilant in the wanting of the transparency to keep that pressure on. It's a very small group of the mob that's still yelling the Kim Trueharts of the world that really go to the Board of Estimates meeting. But there's no long-term commitment to transparency on our end as the public either, I don't feel like. I feel like we always say it. It means something different to different people. And then when people get elected, we don't hold them to that.
And I do hear that. I think that's important. What we try to do here anyway, and I think it's important to keep pushing the people who are elected to address this. This is one of the reasons they get reluctant to come on the program sometimes, I think, because of pushing those kind of issues. I mean, when it comes to the issue of transparency in me and the city government has to do with the way those in power wield their power and not just being allowed to do that without regard to what the public interest is.
And also,
I mean, when you look at Port Covington and TIFs, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I also think we're not even saying one part of transparency is that we make better decisions. You know, when you think about when you have to come to consensus around something, it may take a little longer, whatever, but a lot of times we can actually make better decisions when more people are involved and more things are brought to the table. And I think the way you deal with embarrassment is being transparent. Look, transparency. This is something we're working through. It's not all figured out. You got to stop trying to always be the I know everything kind of politician. Being clear, as a leader, there are things that are in the gray area. There are things that you don't understand. But I think if you look at transparency as a way to say this could be a better decision, and then I have more people on board with the decision, just like Sandalisa. I'm not saying she would have been a great CEO, and I mean, whatever. I have my opinions of her, but that's a whole nother story. But when you bring people in, she actually has more footing to do her work because people have been a part of the process. Just by being a part of the process, she has a different platform. So it actually can undermine her work the way they did that work. That's how I see it. It can undermine what she can do because people will feel like, well, I had no say, quote unquote, in how you were elected.
So, you know, wait to the phone. Let me ask another question. What weight do we give what's happening right now with our elections and our Board of Elections and how our elections have been conducted? I remember I think it was an article I read that reminded me in The Sun about how former elections chief resigned when there were some issues that didn't work and didn't like where it was going. So another one resigned, and people like. But we have had this problem for a while. So how real important is what we're facing here as a serious issue affecting our rights to vote, how we vote, and who gets elected?
Well, I'll say it's a very rare state for very rare occurrence for an election to be decertified. That very rarely ever happens. Even in some of the debacles of the past where they had to have revotes and things like that, I can't remember the state coming in and decertifying all the results. The issue in 2006 where there were a bunch of problems at the polling places, yes, that the city director at the time resigned. Some are calling for Armstead Jones to resign at this time. It seems that the board is behind him, and he's saying that the problems are quite minor. Right now, I know that there are officials from several counties in a warehouse in Baltimore going through the precinct by precinct results. And another question for transparency is whether they're going to let me in and look at that in, as soon as I leave here and go over there. So we will see how transparent that.
Let us know how that works.
This inquiry goes.
Well, okay. We always have issues with our elections.
Every
exactly,
election
yes. year. And I've always contended that we need to stop changing the way that we vote. Like, it seems like every 8 to 10 years, we are changing the machines with which we vote, the way the ballot looks. And when you look at how long it takes for the psyche of a voter to catch on to that and get used to that, we keep moving election days. We keep moving, changing the machines. It's all together in its totality part of the process that makes it suppressive of the voter, but not just this one election. And I think that, you know, people that vote regularly and pay attention are used to all of these issues all of the time. It's not new to us. But what I think sometimes get confused is that the City Board of Elections and the State Board of Elections are not the same people. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we are angry at an Armstead for something that he didn't have the capacity to do anyway.
Right.
He doesn't get to choose these processes. He just has to oversee them. And for years, I don't think we have trained our election judges enough. We pay them well, but we don't give them enough training that unless they are recurring ones, they don't really know. They're not prepared for these different kinds of incidences mm-hmm. that happen. They don't know election law. You had people turning people away from polls. Can't do that. Even if they're independent, supposed to give them a provisional ballot because you're not supposed to turn anyone away that shows up to vote. We had all of those things going on. It's a lack of training. But that he doesn't get to choose that either. He doesn't get to add any additional funding that.
It's the first day on the job for hundreds and hundreds of people.
Yes, yes,
yeah, even with training, your first day at work, sometimes you don't know how to turn on the computer. You know, like that's...
Right.
It's your first day and last day because it's that one day
where there's...
Right.
And you're right. I mean, so Corey McCray had a press conference right before the election where he said, look, the state's website is wrong. It's telling ex-felons they can't vote. And that was actually a state issue.
Right. And they sent letters out.
Right. Well, the letters were the city's issue. But there are problems on both sides of this coin.
Let me jump into the phones. All right. 410-319-8888. Holly, you're on the air. Welcome. Holly, you there?
Yes. Hello.
Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning. I'd like to bring the focus back to the air conditioning again. There's a reason why the mythological concept of hell is about fire. And also bring to mind the concept that the way we judge a society is in terms of how it treats its powerless people. We're talking about children here and teachers, groups who are essentially have no voice. And there's a disturbing political tactic being used, which is trying to leverage the situation by threatening to withhold funds from schools. This is happening also in the federal realm in terms of Obama threatening to do so with North Carolina with respect to the transgender bathroom issue in schools. I'm not sure what my point is, but I guess I'm just. Several points there. It's cool enough out right now to not to imagine how awful it would be to be a kid or a teacher in those schools
right.
when it's 95 degrees. I don't know what is the possible effective route here? Do we have to have sort of a Huey Newton sort of Black Panther revolutionary suicide in terms of our politics or what? Because it gets to the point where I think people feel like, what the hell can they do?
Holly, thanks for the call. No, I appreciate it. I think that there's a lot of confusion in a lot of people's minds about what where to go with this. And I think that something Ronnie said earlier made a lot of sense to me just about the whole air conditioning mess that you've got to – it's a complex issue that people want to make simple. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think the politics are there as Luke was talking about earlier. I think that's really, really real. And I also think this is a very – that people don't get, I think, that schools – I'm talking about the engineering of a school is a complex system. Mm-hmm. This is not something that it's just like you had a blowout in your circuit and you call an electrician to come fix the something in your house. This is a huge building with HVAC systems and mm-hmm. and
it's
electrical systems.
We always try to oversimplify
right.
everything.
It's not simple.
Even in the whole notion of the public meetings and transparency, we make it so simplistic. We'll just open up the meetings. Well, okay, well, let's look at it in terms of where's your intention. Is the intention to defraud or deceive, or is there really some reason why you're keeping this private? Mm-hmm. Is it about you being embarrassed and not having it figured out? Then just let's deal with that. I don't know. We just try to blanket right. everything and go, and then.
Because they don't, I think what happens, Luke, many times, and Kat, is that they don't, they being the people, like whether it's BDC or school boards, they really think they know A, best how to make this work, and we don't. And B, that they think that they're doing the right thing.
Yes, exactly.
They think that they know how to make this
exactly.
work.
Exactly.
And mm-hmm. and so I'm making an extra $10 million. Well, that's good
because we're making it work. Do they think that incorrectly, though? I mean, there was a hiring process that selected them, or they were elected.
Who was elected?
No,
so
they
what?
Weren't. They Sir, weren't.
Nobody was elected to the school board.
Nobody's
elected to the school board of BDC, but we feel the same way about things that the council does. We were talking about the board estimates and the $33,000 for the lawyer that hired this woman. So regardless of they're elected or appointed, there was a selection process. So are they wrong? I'm just asking, playing devil's advocate, are they wrong to believe that as a body that they do know how to do it and what's best?
But I think as a person, like I said, being on PCAB, understanding policy, because that's what we figured, that's what we were there to do, to inform policy. They know that we're in crisis. They know that Baltimore City Schools is under attack in certain kinds of ways. That's why they let Thornton go. Okay. Now, you bring in a new CEO under a cloud of suspicion. Now, I'm not a genius in leadership, but I would argue that that would actually undermine the forward movement that you're trying to produce.
Or do you not want to produce a forward movement?
And, well,
and it is intentionally leaving you what.
But that
you
was
wanted
the whole
the outcome
point
to be.
Of putting him, taking him, you know, paying him off, if you will, because cleanup man, y'all, you got to read about the cleanup man in blaxploitation films. He was the ideal that. Okay, and he's walking away with a nice check for not working for a year. Well, I ain't mad at him. But the point I'm trying to make is when you're a leader, you have to think about all sides of the issue. There's not just I'm going to be transparent or not transparent. What is the impact of not being transparent on the intention and the outcome? That has to be considered. And I think with the Sandalisa piece, I think it's going to set her up in ways that are going to be detrimental. Now, Will, I called the cleanup man thing. I'm calling this on today that she's going to be undermined in certain kinds of ways. And because she does have a history with Alonzo, that's not as pleasant as people would like to believe. And I'll leave that alone because I've anyway, but
you just said it about 10 times.
Yeah.
You say I'm going to leave it alone.
I can't leave it alone. It's
before we have to go to break, Luke, you have a thought?
Sure. As I said, I think off air, as angry as many people are about the lack of transparency in the CEO process, I think it's tempered somewhat from the fact that many people do know the new CEO, and she does have a track record here. And what we saw from several recent hires was that sometimes when we go on these nationwide searches and we take people from Oakland or Milwaukee and they come here, they don't always fit perfectly. And sometimes I think Baltimoreans are more comfortable with somebody they know and they believe can do the job already.
We'll see others. Well, we're looking forward to having Sonia Santelises on the show when she gets settled in.
Don't have on with Ronnie.
Huh?
No, I don't have a problem with her. See, my thing is impersonal. It's just that there are some things that she did when she was under Alonzo, maybe under the direction of him because he was who he was, that were questionable. And that's a fact. So everybody wants to gloss over all of it. And likely, you know, what is it? What I want to say.
And
it happens.
And we also have a tendency sometimes to even though we have questions about Alonzo and what he did on some levels and a number of levels, we also have a tendency to demonize Alonzo too as well. I think that
no,
not until you do.
Oh yeah,
I think that is something we also have done in the city. People politically have demonized him, which I think one of the reasons he ran off because he was just the way he was being attacked so much in ways I think were unfair. When you could attack him for certain education policies, he was also being attacked in a lot of personal, really deep ways.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
So that was absurd, I thought so. But I want to thank the three of you. It's been a really good discussion. We'll come back to this and even more. Great, good roundtable. You heard Dr. Ronnie Ellington, associate professor of mathematics here at Morgan State University. You've been on the show many, many times, and we'll continue coming on. Always good to have you on.
Yes, and it's your birthday week.
It's my birthday week. Cat Bird, good to have you here.
Thank you, darling.
Luke Broadwater, hope you get in there and let us
know. Go ahead. Tell us what's going on, Luke.
We'll see if they let me in.
We got our transparency guru here. Thank you.
We're going to take a short break and come back and talk to some conservative thinkers about what's happening inside the Republican Party. Stay with us.
Trying to be so good. They're stoning.